You'll rust out before you wear out. That's the title of these talks. Came from volume 2 of the testimonies. And I tell my patients this all the time. I must say it at least once a day. You'll rust out before you wear out. Even when you're extremely sick, I find that exercise can be very beneficial. A little bit to do is wonderful. I have a philosophy that I want to tell you this week, and I hope that you will be able to pick this up. There are times when I have to tell patients there's nothing more that I can do for them physically. They're dying. Physically dying. They're dying the first death. I have a 14-year-old that's helping me with these slides. And Michael, I didn't get that last picture, did I? There we go. Thank you. I couldn't do this without Michael Hadley. I'll tell you what. A month ago, I didn't even know how to use PowerPoint. And Michael Hadley helped me through this to get this all together. And he just turned 14 last week, and I greatly appreciate his help in assisting me to become up to speed with technology. This is a picture of me. How long ago? I gave the health talks here. 1989. I wasn't fortunate enough to be in this room. We did it very intimately with slides and overheads, which we've now transferred to PowerPoint. So if you can remember that far back, you might recognize a few things. Back then, I was struggling with Crohn's disease, as I am now. And in 1993, I almost died. I had a ruptured bowel. And if you get squeamish, I'll tell you when to duck your head. Because we're going to show some real pictures of me and some real pictures of people's having bypasses. And we want you to understand what goes on in the human body when we die the first death. We have victory over the second death, but we are not given victory over the first death. But we are given a promise that we can improve health. Now, what we're going to do, I'm told by Michael I'm only supposed to put in one click. I'm too many clicks. I'll get this straight. By the end of the week, I'll be great. You know, I have to tell you that speaking to you in this auditorium and not in a very close quarters like we have done in the past is somewhat intimidating. I'd rather be taken care of an acute MI in the hospital. Today we're going to talk about the Great American Diet. Tuesday is obesity, a brain disorder. Now I'm hoping with some of these facts you can start up a conversation with anybody on the street. And from there you can lead to talking about spiritual things. So we want to tell you this, whether you're obese or not, that you can get some facts to be a witness. On Wednesday, we're going to talk about I'm tired. The number one cause or the complaint that I hear in my office is, I'm tired. Can't you do something for me? I just don't have any energy. We're going to give you some very helpful practical hints, non-prescription, that you can implement so that you don't have to feel tired anymore. Now, what we'd like to do this week is learn a text. And this is our text. When you put this on your heart, it's what got me through when I almost died. And let's say this together. Worry is blind and cannot discern the future. But Jesus sees the end from the beginning. In every difficulty, he has his way prepared to bring relief. Our Heavenly Father has 1,000 ways to provide for us of which we know nothing. Those who accept the one principle of making a service in honor of God supreme will find perplexities vanish and a plain path before their feet. Do you believe that? Amen. I'm glad for that. Today is Memorial Day, and I have to tell you a little about my father. Now that he's retired, he has spoken a little more about what he went through during World War II. He would never tell us anything except that he was there at D-Day. And recently has told us that he was in the sixth wave to come in on shore at Omaha Beach. It was not sunrise yet. They were still many machine gun nests there. They hadn't taken the pillboxes out yet. He said he'd never been so scared in his whole life. He said that getting off the transport carrier and onto the beach, he had to step over bodies. He doesn't know why God spared him. And later, after he got through that and into France, he was at the Battle of the Bulge, where he was wounded. My father was then, at the end of the war, a master sergeant, the highest level you could go from enlisting. And he was then in charge of supply for northern France for about a year after the war. He then came back to what is now Andrews University. And I get ahead of my story, and I'll tell you the story of how he sat next to my father-in-law, Pastor James Walter, and how they never would dream, sitting next to each other at Emmanuel Missionary College during chapel, that their children would someday marry. This is my father 2 weeks ago with my mother in Ojai, California. They have an orange tree farm. Lemons and kiwis. Now, what I want to do each morning is tell you just a little history of why I am a fifth generation Seventh-day Adventist. Now, usually when you get that far down the line, you don't really believe or understand where your Adventist roots came from. But as a fifth generation Seventh-day Adventist, I want to tell you that I am strong in the faith. But I have to tell you some very shaking news about my family. And that's what I want to tell you each morning. Not only fifth generation Seventh-day Adventist, but a fourth generation medical worker for the Lord. This gospel of the kingdom will be preached throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. My great-grandmother, Eva Elmore, was born in 1896 in Illinois. Her older sister married an evangelist who then met Mrs. White, and the whole family became Seventh-day Adventists, mother, father. My great-grandfather was George Thomas Kerr. He became a Seventh-day Adventist, sold his share in the farm in Hope, Arkansas, and went to Battle Creek to become a nurse. There he met my great-grandmother. They married in Battle Creek, Michigan in 1892. They were married in Uriah Smith's house. Uriah Smith signed the wedding certificate, and we have a copy of that. But because of the influence at the time, they felt they needed to go as missionaries. And indeed, they went to Africa, the first white Seventh-day Adventist to be in the Gold Coast, which is now Ghana, Africa. They went in 1895 with a newborn, Frank. They said in their letters and wrote back that they would stay until Jesus comes. George T. set up a clinic. He and his wife were both nurses. They were the first husband and wife nurse team to graduate from Battle Creek. And their new clinic drew people from all over the area. I think these pictures of the nurses and these wonderful dresses there, I think my grandmother made them for them. We have that sewing machine still as it went around the Cape Horn. The Kerrs with Dudley Hale, the director of the mission, and the chief in the background. You can see the pith helmets they wore, much like Albert Schweitzer of the same vintage. And now I have to stop the story. Because the worst thing that you can imagine happened. And I will continue tomorrow. The Great American Diet, what is it? It's the cause of metabolic syndrome or Syndrome X. Last year, Dr. Zeno Charles Marcel talked about this metabolic problem. It can shorten your life. Over half the people in the United States have Syndrome X, and I would expect half the people here in this auditorium today have the beginnings or some of the signs of Syndrome X. Are you pre-diabetic? Do you know that the Great American Diet can be a cause of early death? Fast food came to the Cherokee Indian Reservation in 1982, just 20 years ago. Cherokee Reservation is one county away from us here today. Now diabetes is affecting younger and younger people. The shift from game and whole foods-based diet to one of convenience has disastrous effects. We're going backwards, Michael. Technology, isn't it wonderful? Times like this, I know I'd rather be taking care of an MI. Now, none of you out there have one today now, please. Yes, question is, it was called metabolic syndrome or Syndrome X, and I'll get into what that entails if I can get to my next slide. All right, here's the tip of the iceberg. And this is the metabolic syndrome. Do you eat more protein? Do you eat more calcium? Do you eat more sugar? Do we get osteoporosis, heart disease, diabetes, cancer, and early aging? And you're always tired? Nutritional impoverishment from empty calories, which can make up to over 50% of what you eat. Low fiber, high fat, and sugar diets can be the cause. No wonder that so many of our people are overfed but undernourished. This is called the McDonald's type diet. The average teenager eats 5 hamburgers a week from McDonald's. This is the Great American Diet. Back in the ideal amount of 100 years ago, the ideal diet was complex carbohydrates 45% and refined sugars less than 10%. And these can be from cereal, breads, fruits, vegetables, potatoes, rice, legumes, and pasta. Now what we've done today is change the whole way we eat. And this makes a whole different set of problems for us. And we only have about 15% complex carbohydrates now. And we have 25% refined sugars, alcohols are in our diets. And this includes soft drinks, cookies, pies, cakes, candy, alcohol. Now there is a link between diet and cancer. Did you know that? Differing rates of cancer incidence in different countries with different eating habits, we found many of these. During World War II, when there was a blockade on the Northern Alliance, Allied nations, countries, they had a marked diminishment of heart attacks, dental caries, strokes, and cancer. 4 years later, when the blockade was lifted, all of a sudden sugar, refined foods could come in. and grandma and grandpa who lived through the tough times with having no food being imported now could eat whatever they wanted, and they dropped dead. Altering rates of cancer occurs in migrants from different countries with low rates, a particular cancer to one with a higher rate of such cancers. We found that Japanese from Japan becoming Americanized and eating American food in Japan or migrating to this country, all of a sudden, their cancer rates were identical to those to where they were living. The cancer rates in populations with particular diet habits are important to notice. Third world countries that do not have the luxury of going to the supermarket and eating whatever they want have less disease, have less heart attacks, have less strokes, do not have hiatal hernias, do not have ulcers, do not have gallbladder disease, do not have breast cancer, do not have colon cancer, do not have constipation, do not have hemorrhoids, do not have diverticulosis. They don't have prostate cancer. They don't have breast cancer. Why don't they have these? Here's a chart with several factors here. The Japanese Japan, the Hawaiian Japanese, and the Caucasians in Hawaii, and their percent of calorie intake and their rate and day and age at which they had atherosclerosis. As you notice, the calories on the bottom get higher as a percent of their diet, 40%. They died sooner or had more atherosclerosis, heart attacks, strokes, etc. Calories for grams of food. There's a lot more calories in the same amount of 1 gram of food in red meat, cheese, but bread had a whole lot less. Potatoes had less and rice had less. I'm going to get that one out of there. We're supposed to do that several times. It's worry is blind and can't discern the future, and it's supposed to be in there a couple times today, but not every time. We found that these other countries that have these high rates, one of the countries was Ireland. They could take a brother and send him to America, and the brother developed all the diseases we have in the United States. But the brother was back in Ireland, did not have any of those diseases. The same could be said for Russia. When they immigrated here, they did not have the garden out back. They did not live from hand to mouth, and they developed all our diseases. They may have been more comfortable for a while, but they ended up dying sooner. We're still waiting for the slides here. All right. Colon cancer and death. We can go from country to country to country, with El Salvador and Thailand being the last because of the amount of fat in their diet, all the way up to the most colon cancer deaths per 50,000. Males to being New Zealand, Canada, and the United States. Dietary fat and breast cancer, also exponential. The lower the fat level, the less cancer. Again, Thailand and El Salvador are at the bottom. And at the top, we have Denmark and the Netherlands, Canada, New Zealand. Very high fat diet and cancer. A month ago now, we were privileged to have a baby horse. And Josie Ann's horse, Sassafras, had a baby. And we were able to stay up and watch this baby be born on April 25. And we wanted to just show you these babies because they are so cute. Now, we've had a major change in our diets. From 1860 to the year 2000, we've changed in the amount of protein has increased. Fat has increased, although it's decreased slightly from 1980. Starch has decreased and sugar has skyrocketed. And you know, if you look at your labels, there's sugar on almost everything. Here is Giuliana's horse. This is Louisa, and she had her baby just earlier this month. And Giuliana loves to ride this horse and have the little baby come beside. And we just had to show you these fun pictures of the family. I'm treating you like family. Is that okay? I hope so. So the Great American Diet is empty calories. Sugar, 21% of it. Visible oils and fats, 20% of it. Alcohol, 9%. 50% of our calories are empty in the typical American diet. They're devoid of vitamins, minerals, fiber, and are loaded with calories. The benefits of a temperate lifestyle include reducing your chance of cancer, heart disease, diabetes, much less generalized sickness, better mental health and memory, improved digestion, more energy and endurance, and living longer. Would you like to live longer? I have patients that tell me, I don't want to live any longer. So would you like to feel better and live longer? Well, I might do that. But we've got to make some major habit changes. Heart attack mortality risk. For Adventist men 35 and over, the Adventist Health Studies, total vegetarians was 14% less, or 14% of what would be expected of the general population. Ovo-lacto vegetarians were 39% of what you expected the general population to have for heart attacks. And non-vegetarians, 56%. Half the North American Seventh-day Adventists are not vegetarians. They did increase their risk of heart attacks, but were much, much less than the general population. Lack of fiber is one of the reasons for some of the problems. Appendicitis, diverticulitis, hiatal hernia, 1 in 4 in the United States have a hiatal hernia. Hemorrhoids, 1 in 2 in the United States have that. Varicose veins, 1 in 2 females over 40. New Guinea, it's only 1 in 800 have varicose veins. Hardening the arteries, 1 in 3 men in the United States will die from hardening the arteries. Here are some hardening the artery pictures. Now, I have to tell you, when we do angiograms to evaluate narrowing in coronary arteries, we sometimes will have to put a balloon inside these arteries to open them up. And when I talk about hardening the arteries, I really mean hardening the arteries. Your car tires have anywhere between 28 to 50 pounds per square inch of air in them. When we dilate an artery in someone's coronary, we can take up to 150 pounds per square inch to dilate that. Now, some of the killers that we see are taking the fiber out of all our grain, our processed foods. It's protective against colon cancer. It scrubs the bowel. Excess fat, cholesterol or saturated, can increase your chance of rusting out. Salt. We eat 10 times as much salt as high fiber societies. This contributes to high blood pressure and heart disease. If you come in with high blood pressure and you're not willing to change your lifestyle, the first thing I will give you is a water pill, because that will bring down your blood pressure, because for every molecule of salt you eat, your body retains a molecule of water. Now, we need more fiber in our diet. Bran, legumes, whole grains, veggies, fruits, and salads. Now, this is on a range. If any of you want to gain weight, we're going to go with the high, good fat foods, which is going to include nuts, avocado, and olives. If you want to lose weight, you're going to go to the other end of this with salads and fruits. So with the higher fiber we have, the more likely we are to stay healthy. It's recommended that you have 35 grams a day of fiber. That 1 gram equals 7 calories burned. The more fiber you have, the more it neutralizes the calories that you're intaking. So you could neutralize up to 250 calories of food a day by the fiber you eat. That can equal 15 pounds that you can lose in a year. We're going to this week go over several ways to lose weight and feel better and be healthy. Fiber is your number one choice at this time, and it's the first one I will give you. Stay as regular as a Swiss clock with the fiber. Fiber actually absorbs fat. I tell my patients if they want to lower their cholesterol, we will first give them something like Metamucil. Metamucil will bind your vitamins if you take them at the same time. It will bind some of your nutrients, and so we do have a problem there if you take too much, but it'll also bind your cholesterol. Cholesterol is excreted in your bile. It is absorbed through your bowel, and it is then circulated back through the blood, through the liver, and then excreted back in your gallbladder, where it's then excreted back out into the bowel. This happens 5 to 7 times a day. If you can get enough fiber in there, Metamucil or some other product like that, you can absorb some of that cholesterol naturally. It will not be reabsorbed, and your liver then will go, I'm not getting all this back. I guess I need to make a little more cholesterol. It will do that temporarily, and then it will downregulate, and you will find that your cholesterol level is lower. Fiber blocks the cholesterol? It really does. And I've had people drop their cholesterols by 20 to 50 points. Fiber sweeps through your digestive system, colon like a broom, and cleans out toxins, carcinogens, and fatty deposits in cholesterol. Fiber is the safest and best cure for constipation. Mrs. White talks about using a little bit of olive oil as well for constipation. This is a picture of someone swallowing food, and this is your swallowing tube and your stomach, your esophagus. There's acid in the stomach. The stomach has a protective lining for acid. And what happens is, that is great because you have acid in the stomach. But you know what? Your swallowing tube, your esophagus, does not have a protective lining for that acid. And the acid is supposed to melt and mix with all of your food. In this particular picture, we can see acid coming up into the esophagus. Now, that's a bad thing because it can burn. And you can have chest pain just like you are having a heart attack because the nerves in the chest are the same as innervate your heart. I've told my patients when they're having chest pain, I always worry, and I said, when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask the Lord why He only made one set of nerves in your chest. Because chest pain can be multiple things that are not your heart. What they could be is a rib. They can be a disc in your back that pinches nerves so that it comes around and causes a radiculopathy. It can be pleurisy. It can be pericarditis. It can be pneumonia. It can be a gallbladder attack. It can be an ulcer. It could be esophagitis, this acid burning in your esophagus. And so the rule of thumb when you have somebody coming in the emergency room is that out of every 2 out of 10 that really have heart disease, if you don't find 8 that don't have heart disease, you're going to miss those 2. And we hope when you come in with chest pain that it is not your heart, because those other reasons will not kill you. But this is one that will bother a lot of people. Now, we have lots of people that complain of being tired. And one of the reasons for being tired is what we eat. Now, before I get into this, I need my girls to pass out papers to all of you so you can write down your questions. And we can start on that so that I can have something to talk about at the end of the program up here. I'm going to do this a la Doug Batchelor, when he gets up and recites the questions, because we have such a big auditorium here, it's going to be very difficult for us to me to listen and hear all the questions that you have. And I want to answer every one of your questions. Now, I really would like to do something else with these pieces of paper, something very unusual. I'd like you to put your prayer praises and prayer requests on these papers. And we'll pray over them this week, and we'll praise over them this week, So not only your questions, but I want your prayer praises and prayer requests as we spend this time this week together. Your pH is an electrical balance between negative hydroxyl ions compared to positive hydrogen ions. And this is extremely important for you to stay alive. You've heard about people talking about vital force. We've had a messenger tell us about vital force. Your pH range runs scale from 0, the most acidic, to 14, which is the most alkaline. But to survive, our bodies have to stay on the alkaline side of neutral. It takes vital force to stay alkaline. It takes energy for you to stay alive and not be too acidic. Once you become too acidic, you die. So really, on a death certificate, if you wanted to really be accurate, the reason that everybody died was they got too acidic, for whatever reason that was. And they were not able to compensate. Waste products are acidic, like lactic acid. When you exercise, you get too much lactic acid, and you become too acidic. Our diets cause us to be more acidic. Unfortunately, when we've changed here in the last 100 years of what we've eaten and how we eat, it's become much more acidic. Most foods are acid or base or alkaline producing. Acidic pH destroys living bones. Our bones are one of the greatest reservoirs for our base or alkaline. Liver and pancreas make alkaline enzymes to keep us trying to be balanced. Our Peyer's patches make a chyle, which is very alkaline. And our blood carries carbonic acid to your lungs and is released as carbon dioxide and water. That's about 40% of our acid. If pH drops to 7.38 from 7.4, the body breaks down bone and muscle to neutralize this acid. Now you know where I'm going with this, don't you? The bones are the body's ultimate acid neutralizing storage facility. Why in this country do we have so much osteoporosis that we don't see in other countries? Review of 85 studies in 33 countries show hip fractures to be related to acid-producing diets. 1 in 6 Americans will suffer a hip fracture. That doesn't matter if you're male or female. 1 in 6 will suffer a hip fracture before they die. We want to go over some texts, because we're talking about changing the way we live so that God can communicate with us better. We don't want to have a hard heart. We want to do the right thing. But when our bodies are sick and ill, God can't communicate with us. In Ezekiel, it says, "A new heart I will give you, and a new spirit I will put within you." Do you believe that? I have people tell me that that's after we get to heaven. I believe this is before we get to heaven. God has promised that as a covenant. If you will do and keep my covenants, you keep my commandments, I will do these things for you. It says, "And I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes and be careful to observe my ordinances." Here's a bypass. Open heart. We still mostly do it the same way. Later this week, I will show you what we are doing here in the United States, brand new. We're doing it laparoscopically, bypasses, without ever opening their chest up. We do it through 3 tiny holes with a machine, with a computer. The doctor's in another room. I'll show you those pictures later this week. That was a left internal mammary graft. Ripened cheese should never be introduced into our stomach. Our messenger told us that in 1868. And many people have used that to say, "Well, I don't believe in her anymore." A local pastor told me that he appreciated much of the things that Mrs. White said, but I don't agree with most of them. Why did she say this? Was there reason behind this? Was there medical science to go with this? Or is she just saying, don't eat the good stuff? Just eat the stuff that tastes like cardboard. She said butter is less harmful when eaten cold on bread and then when it's used in cooking. You know what we now know? When you leave butter out longer than 20 minutes, it oxidizes. And oxidized or rusting can affect your coronary arteries, and it causes them to disintegrate. And they end up putting a scar on there, and it's day after day, year after year of you eating this way, and that lining is your hardening of the arteries. One day, there will be a like layers of paint on the old barn, it will peel off, and you'll have an ulcer inside of your artery. The ulcer will not have any nerve endings, so you won't feel it in your heart or in your brain. But the body will go, aha, cut. Now, when you get a cut, what happens? What does your body usually do? Puts a scab on it, doesn't it? What happens when it puts a scab in that tiny little vessel? Because there's an ulcer there. You get a heart attack, or you have unstable angina. You get a heart attack, or you get a stroke if it's in your head. We call it an infarct if it's in your kidney or anywhere else in your bowel. Ellen White knew that if you cooked butter, it would become oxidized. How did she know that with a third grade education? How'd she know about cheese? And we'll talk about that. Some of the reasons for worsening your acidosis can be dialysis, weak bones, bloated stomachs. I have people that say, well, I can't eat alkaline food because it makes ulcers in my mouth. Ulcers in your mouth. That's very interesting because I've found that people that make ulcers in their mouth are too acidic. If we get them balanced again, all of a sudden, all those things that they perceive to be acidic, like fresh fruits, citrus fruits, which actually are alkaline in your body, end up not making ulcers in their mouth. Women taking potassium bicarbonate had 27% less calcium in their urine in 2 to 3 weeks. Now, this is crucial because many, many years we have used sodium bicarbonate or baking soda for indigestion until we came out with all these fancy prescription medications. And it found that it was helping people. It was helping people. Now, too much is also a bad thing. There's temperance in all things. I personally do not use any toothpaste because of the fluoride in it. I feel fluoride is a heavy metal toxin, and it can cause cancer. It can cause Alzheimer's. Fluoride attaches to aluminum. Now, there are over 50 reasons for Alzheimer's disease. Only one of them is what we really call as Alzheimer's. And when we actually do look at the human brain and see the neural bundle tangles, there are aluminum molecules in there. Where did that come from? Fluoride also, in my opinion, causes hypothyroidism in a large majority of patients. So I use baking soda to brush my teeth. Oh, the dentists are going to have a fit with that because it takes off your enamel. Well, my answer for that is when my enamel is gone, I'll get caps. Now, you say, what about milk? Milk is actually neutral. Milk is neutral. It is equal parts positive and negative. In cheese, however, the alkaline whey is removed, making it acidic. Cheese, the alkaline whey, which is the liquid part, is gone. And all you have is an extremely acidic product. The sharper, the crumblier the cheese, the more acid-producing. The longer it is for you to balance out that base to get you back to neutral pH. Parmesan cheese, which is a delight to so many of us, is the most acid-forming of all cheeses tested. In our house, what we've done is we've changed from Parmesan cheese what we put on our popcorn. Brewer's yeast, thank you. Brewer's yeast, very high in B vitamins, very high in chromium. Brewer's yeast, when you put this on your pasta, on your lasagna, isn't bad in place of Parmesan cheese. Try brewer's yeast instead. Not all proteins are acid-forming. Animal proteins are strongly acidic, and that makes it harder, again, for your body to balance. Vegetable proteins contain alkaline compounds that usually neutralize any acidic effect. This is why some studies have shown that high-protein diets cause bone loss, and some didn't, because it depended on whether they were eating animal protein or vegetable protein. Chronic acidosis causes muscle weakness and fatigue. Another reason for fatigue now. The first muscle group that goes, that suffers with this, are the legs and the thighs. Anybody have weak legs and thighs? Maybe we need to get you more alkaline in the food that you eat. Acidosis stems from poor oxygen utilization. Without proper disposal, you suffocate. Your body slowly, slowly doesn't have enough air. Due to excess carbon dioxide and lack of oxygen, acidic individuals will We're having so much fun with these slides, aren't we? Sigh a lot? Have you ever seen anybody just go, Now, they can also be depressed, but they can also be too acidic. And you know what? It's harder for your brain to balance the chemicals in it when you're acidic. They can experience breathlessness. They can pant at the least exertion, have frequent muscle pains, causing insomnia. I had a patient that's 41 years old come in last week and tell me that he couldn't sleep at night. I went over, he's thin, and he's had a bypass. He's had a recent balloon angioplasty after the bypass at 41, and he has a lot of risk factors. But he's really trying to take care of himself now, and he said, I just can't sleep. I said, well, tell me what's going on in your life. He says, well, you know, I can't sleep unless I go and get something to eat. I said, okay, well, there's part of the problem right there. We're eating just before we go to bed. The stomach is not digesting. Your body's not able to rest because it's busy doing all of this extra work when it should have been trying to restore your body to better health and to repair all the damage during the day. And this is the reason. We got him not to eat at night, which was tough. And the trick that we'll talk about later this week is if when you go to bed and you're starving, you just go to bed and don't eat. When you wake up first thing in the morning and you find that you're not hungry, then the night before, your stomach was just tired. It wasn't hungry. It can only tell you one message. If you're hungry when you first wake up, then the night before, you probably were hungry. And, of course, I don't know too many of you that are starving when you first wake up. It's going to take a while. He's sleeping without sleeping medication. He's sleeping now by changing his diet around, not eating at night. Constant lump in your throat. Do you have a constant lump in your throat? Usually this is from dehydration and loss of sodium. Over 50% of the world is dehydrated. 75% of those in the United States are dehydrated. And we'll talk about dehydration this week. A program on CNN last Friday talked about we don't need 8 8-ounce glasses of water. Adventist Health Studies just came out with a release that we found that lack of water was a contributing factor to heart disease. We'll talk about that later this week. Do you have difficulty holding your breath for at least 20 seconds? You may be too acidic. We may need to just shift your acid-base balance and you will have a new life. That will mean that you'll have to forego some of the habits of food that you've been eating. 70-80% of all foods should be alkaline-producing. However, we're eating more like 30% in this country as alkaline-producing, the rest of it being acidic. If you are not eating a diet rich in whole grains, not polished rice, fruits, vegetables, you're not getting enough base-containing foods. Vegetable juicing can jumpstart this process of alkalizing your body. Another thing that vegetable juicing, I don't recommend for everybody, but to get you started, that's not bad. Another thing that vegetable juicing does, the first hour or so, you have an extra hydrogen that's around to gobble up any free radicals that you have in your body. One of the processes that vegetable juicing has done, we found, is simulate those that were in Hunza land. And we wondered for so long why Hunza land people lived longer. And we found it was the extra hydrogen in the glaciers that melted and they drank that water. And we can do that same thing with juicing. Now, some of the modifiable factors you have for heart disease include high blood pressure, abnormal cholesterol, smoking, diabetes, being overweight, more than 30% of your ideal body weight, and we will calculate what your ideal body mass index should be this week, and lack of physical exercise. Some of the things that you cannot overcome that are stuck is if you're advanced in age, you cannot bring that back down, as we say, chronologically challenged. Your race, you can't change. If you're a male, you can't really change that. Some people may try, though. Postmenopausal status in women and a family history. You can't pick your parents. They picked you. Now, here's a picture of a bypass. Many people ask, what does it actually look like when we open up the heart? Here's a graft that comes down onto the anterior descending. They sew it in with tiny little sutures to hold that graft in place. And I again want to reiterate what we're going to do this week. I'll do this slide again. It keeps showing up. Tomorrow we're going to talk about, is obesity a brain disorder? And you're not going to want to miss that, because it's going to be some interesting facts. Many people have asked, well, will there be handouts this camp meeting? And I will say no. What I've done is taken health lectures that I've given and put them in a book. And American Cassette Ministries have been kind to have that over at their table. And if you would like one, they're back there. And it has the same cover that we just started with. You'll rust out before you wear out, which you've seen several times. Now let's say our verse again, because this will give us better health, mental health, and spiritual health. Worry is blind and cannot discern the future. But Jesus sees the end from the beginning. In every difficulty, he has his way prepared to bring relief. Our Heavenly Father has 1,000 ways to provide for us of which we know nothing. Those who accept the one principle of making the service and honor of God supreme will find perplexities vanish and a plain path before their feet. Do you think you can memorize that by the end of the week? I hope you can, because when things come up in your life, this is a great one to fall back on. It's a great one to fall back on. So I've asked my wife to come up and help me with some of the questions. That you have written down for me. We got some of the questions. Everybody's picked up questions. So we can do some of the questions now that people have. As I talk about my near-death experience, I shouldn't be before you. I've taken my chart as a physician and looked at it. It's quite thick. And I say, this person in this chart should be dead. But I stand here before you because of God's graces. Maybe even for this very meeting that I'm here. Here's some more over here. The girls are picking those up? Okay, great. Now remember, I want prayer praises and prayer requests. We'll hand these papers out every day. Prayer praises and prayer requests as well. Please comment on energy levels and hyperthyroidism. Hyperthyroidism is an overactive thyroid. And I'm glad you've asked me that, because there's some new literature out about iodine. Oftentimes when we become vegetarians, we cease to eat the vegetable of the sea, which is seaweed. And we have found that there is a whole lot less thyroid problems in Japan. And they eat a lot of sushi. And they always thought it was the raw fish, but it wasn't. It was the seaweed that they were eating. And what we found in that iodine in the seaweed is we're markedly iodine deficient. Yes, we have iodine in the salt. It's very small. It's 2 micrograms. And we need about 200 micrograms of iodine for several benefits. One of them is to keep our thyroid healthy, to keep our thyroid, all our molecule, our receptor sites on thyroid, and keep them all saturated. Another thing we found is countries that are high in iodine usage, such as Iceland before the 1960s, where they took the fish all the extra parts of the fish that they weren't selling there locally. They took them, ground them up, and they fed them to the cows. This high iodine load decreased the chance of prostate and breast cancer in Iceland. He said, oh, well, that didn't have anything to do with it. Well, one thing changed. In 1960, they began general harvesting with the big ships. And all the parts of the fish did not go to cow. They went to other countries. They used every part efficiently. And all of a sudden, they jumped up in their risk of breast cancer and prostate cancer. We have now found that the rate of in situ breast cancer in Japan is very high. But the risk of dying of breast cancer in Japan is very low. The same we find with prostate cancer. Prostate cancer in Japan is exactly the same for diagnosis as it is in this country. But we rarely have somebody advanced to metastatic disease spreading the cancer because of the iodine. So what can I recommend? We know that in a nuclear holocaust, if you aren't consumed right away, that our problem will be the thyroid. It's the first organ that is very sensitive to radiation. If we can have enough iodine on all the receptors, this is less of an issue. Now, hyperthyroidism. Hyperthyroidism can be caused by many things. The most common reason for hyperthyroidism today is viral. And we call that Hashimoto's thyroiditis, or idiopathic, we're not quite sure. The thyroid just gets confused, and it makes the thyroid go high, it goes low, and sometimes you have to have ablation of the thyroid with I-131. Sometimes you can take medication that will temporarily bring it down to see if this will pass. Sometimes you have to have a thyroid resection. Back in the before 1974, when we gave thyroid in the medical profession, we did thyroid from desiccated cow thyroid gland. It's now called Armour Thyroid, or Thyrolar is one of the other brands. And we gave, as physicians, enough thyroid to make them just a little jittery, like they just had a little too much caffeine. And then we'd bring it back down a smidge, and that's the dose they would have. We didn't really have very accurate ways to measure their thyroid. We had protein binding iodine as a test, and it really wasn't accurate on everybody. And this is how we treated them. We treated their symptoms. Like my grandfather used to do, he taught me, treat the symptoms, and then you can worry about the diagnosis later. In fact, he diagnosed my Crohn's disease without knowing what it was. He treated me, put me on medication, and I was better. Didn't know what it was, but he was treating my symptoms. And it wasn't until I was at La Sierra and Dr. Herber did a small bowel biopsy that we actually got the diagnosis of why I was always so tired from age 13 on. And that was diagnosed at age 19. Didn't have a thyroid problem, though. That's a different story. All right. Now, back on hyperthyroidism. Your energy level gets really picked up with this. And what we've done since 1974, an article in New England Journal of Medicine, showed that we had a new test. A new test to see exactly how your thyroid worked. It was called a thyroid stimulating hormone. And it didn't have anything to do with the thyroid. It was actually measuring your pituitary output to see if there was enough thyroid available. The TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, can tell you if your thyroid is putting out enough thyroxine, or T4, 4 being the amount of iodines on this molecule. If there is not enough iodine on the molecules, of course, it's not going to be made. And your thyroid then is going to get enlarged like a goiter because it's struggling to try to make this. So we oftentimes will treat that. Now, while it's being a goiter, it sometimes will get hyperthyroid and hypothyroid. I would suspect I see for every one hyperthyroidism patient, I see probably 100 to 200 hypothyroid patients. In a cardiology practice with primary care following the patient, I should not see thyroid problems, but I do because it affects arrhythmias, it affects their mental function, and it affects their total well-being. So it's something I check quite often. Now here's the problem we have with this new test, the TSH, that has been ubiquitous. Once we found out what the TSH was, these people that were treated with desiccated thyroid were down, they were taken down their levels because they were obviously too high. And they took them down maybe 3/4 of what they were taking, and they no longer felt good. But that's too bad, because we're following the test. And the test says you're okay, so it's too bad. Well, that's good for some people. They can follow what the test is, but some people, they need more thyroid, and here's the reason. There appears to be in certain people's lives certain times when the thyroid, T4, thyroxin, is not metabolized correctly. T4 is not an active hormone. It's a prohormone. It will not give you any benefit. So you can take Synthroid, which is T4, and unless you can break it down to the active thyroid, it's useless to you. And the active thyroid is T3. T3, again, three iodines. If it's not taken off the correct corner of that pentagon, which it actually is, the molecule shape, it's not active again. So if you take it off any of the other three corners, the iodine, so you have a T3, it's going to not be active. It's a dummy. It has to be taken off the correct corner. Some people can't do that in certain times of their life. So they need some T3 or Cytomel. Or they need desiccated thyroid like we used to do. Cow thyroid. Yes, you may risk having mad cow disease someday. In the meantime, however, if that's not an issue for you, we would probably suggest that you might try, if you feel tired and you're not getting your adequate thyroid level, to try some desiccated thyroid or something that has T3 in it so that you can see if your body is not converting T4 to T3 correctly. And if you don't have enough thyroid, you won't have enough energy. And if you have too much thyroid, you'll be overactive and can't sleep and lose hair just like you would if you were hypothyroid. Did I answer that well enough? Is there any way you can stop taking thyroid medication? Probably not. If your thyroid has gotten used to it, what we try to do is ablate the thyroid. Now, why am I such an expert as a cardiologist? My mother-in-law has to be on thyroid. My wife had papillary carcinoma of the thyroid, fortunately diagnosed very early, and was resected. My daughter has to be on thyroid for a goiter. So I've tried to understand not only what I'm told from the medical science, but actually what works. So it's not always, unfortunately, what the test shows. We've got to treat the patient. And sometimes I have to ignore what the thyroid blood tests show. So is there any way to stop your thyroid? Usually not. If you're on a very tiny, tiny dose, you might do better by adding some iodine or some kelp. What I found, there is a subset of patients that are on thyroid who just still don't feel good. Without increasing your thyroid medication, you might add the kelp to that and get some more energy. And a brand, you know, that comes to mind is what's at Walmart with the B6 in it, and that certainly won't hurt you any. So can you get off your thyroid? Probably not. It's an essential hormone that you need, and if you're needing and supplemented on it, I think it's important that you take it. That would be something you work out with your healthcare provider. Okay, what was the recommendation for Metamucil? High-fiber foods, you can get those in my book. It'll have a list of them. Metamucil is a fiber. It can bind bile salts. Those that have just had their gallbladder taken out oftentimes have acute diarrhea. We find that if we can give them a bile sequestering agent such as Metamucil, there's a prescription one called Questran or cholestyramine that can bind bile salts. This also binds cholesterol. So if we're trying to have another way to get down your cholesterol, Metamucil could be a way you could try this. Don't take your vitamins with it because it's going to suck those up too and you won't absorb them. All right, what is the best thing to do for acid reflux? Well, one of the best things, of course, is to change your diet so we're on a mostly alkali. Another way is not to eat for 4 hours before you lay down and not to sit down for at least 2 hours after you've eaten. Need lots of water. It appears that water has a big play in this, and your 8-ounce glasses may not be enough. You may need more for acid reflux. And we'll show you some pictures of that and go into that more later this week. But some of the things I can suggest is higher fiber diet, no eating between meals, 5 hours at least for that stomach to rest and empty out. Because if you eat in between, you're going to have half-digested food in there, and it's not going to completely digest. And part of the reason that you get that extra acid is all of a sudden goes, oh, I've got to make more acid. I'm not finished digesting what I've got. And it starts making more acid. It splashes around. There's also some things, very simple things that I tell my patients, which one of the biggest complaints we have are palpitations. But they also get the heartburn with the palpitations. And I said, how much caffeine are you using? And they're saying, oh, a cup of coffee a day in the morning. And I said, when do you use your heartburn? Oh, usually in the afternoon when the coffee's wearing out. I said, okay, did you know that your esophageal ring, the junction between your esophagus and your stomach, is a muscle ring, and it should hold tight so that acid can bounce around and mix in your stomach but not come up into your esophagus? And we're talking acid like on the inside of your mouth here, you know, ow. And this is what it does to your esophagus. And when you get the severe pain, you've actually gone through the layers of your esophagus to the nerve fibers. What I find is no caffeine, no tea, no colas, no chocolate. Do you hear me? Chocolate can make esophageal reflux. No mint. No mint tea. What is it when they give you at the nice restaurant, when you're finished, when you're really stuffed, they will give you a chocolate mint, will they not? Because then you will open up your esophageal ring and not feel so bloated, so you will feel good about that restaurant and come back to them. There's method to their madness. So, what am I going to do about reflux? We're going to go with more fiber, more water, no in-between meals, no caffeinated products, and no chocolate. What is the relationship between blood pH and urine pH? Urine is going to be your waste products, and normally it should be acidic. Normally about pH of 5 or less. And when it's alkaline, it usually means that there's a major problem. The blood pH should be balanced, and it will be balanced at cost of you being dead. When we get patients that have pneumonia, adult respiratory distress syndrome, trauma to their chest, and they need to be on the ventilator, we have to watch their pH very, very closely because they can breathe out so much acid that it can affect their pH. And we will adjust that accordingly with the ventilator. Urine pH is important to evaluate to see if they have infections. When the pH is about 8, we usually have a phosphate type or crystal ability to precipitate crystals in the urine, and that usually is a bacteria. The urine should be where the waste product should be. It should be an acid pH, and when you eat with this kind of diet that is very healthy with more alkaline foods, your pH will adjust accordingly, and you'll save your vital force. What else, Judy, do we have? Okay, can a person with lupus stop taking prednisone and other medications? Lupus is an autoimmune disorder. We don't know exactly what causes it. We do know the body gets real irritated with it, and there are about 50 different kinds of lupus erythematosus. Some of the most benign kind are on the skin. Some of the life-threatening kind are on the internal organs, like lupus of the heart, lupus of the brain. What about prednisone, which is a cortisol? Is there a way to stop that? It would be very dangerous if you're in a flare of your lupus. But lupus fluctuates up and down. And again, it can be helped a lot by what you eat. One of the best things we've found for lupus is omega-3. And it's been reported in the literature that omega-3 supplementation, which is one of the good fatty oils, which you can get from flaxseed, barrage oil, evening primrose oil. And I need the oil, not the seeds particularly, because the seeds tend to not be digested. So if you want to ground them fresh or you want to get them in the capsules, they go bad very quickly in the refrigerator, 2 weeks or less if you open the oil up. You don't want to have rancid omega-3. But omega-3 appears to downregulate the inflammatory response of these autoimmune disorders. It's been shown to improve Crohn's disease, which I take it faithfully. It also has been shown to improve lupus. There's another thing that lupus patients have been shown in the literature. You can take DHEA, dihydroepiandrosterone, and you can get that over the counter. It's Mexican yam. Starts at 25 milligrams. I would have your doctor check a blood level for it, DHEA sulfate, and before you start, and then I would start that if you have lupus, and I would up the dose accordingly to get an adequate DHEA blood level. This also appears to suppress lupus. The other autoimmune diseases can respond also to this same thing. But if you're on prednisone at this time, certainly you can taper, but the idea is not to have another flare of your lupus because it is life-threatening. So if we can go with a really careful diet, more alkalizing, and downregulate your prostaglandin 2 with the omega-3 supplement, and that can take up to 4 to 6 months to completely replace the good, the bad omega-6, which is also essential, with the good omega-3. We'll talk about this later in the week. But the United States average ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 is 6 to 1. It should be 2 to 1. 6 to 1. And the difference, even though omega-6 is essential, we'll talk about that later this week. Will a high-fiber diet help lupus? It's certainly possible. If you have an antibody, like we think lupus is, that's attacking you, it's seen something in there. Whether this is a prion disease like mad cow disease, whether this is a virus or a slow virus or a virus particle, like they think maybe Crohn's disease, lupus certainly can be better with a diet. Sometimes in my Crohn's, I can't have a high-fiber diet because it'll make things worse. It'll irritate the bowel that's already raw, and you have to be careful with that. Like when you have an acute diverticulitis attack where the bowel is inflamed, you want to have soft diet for a while, and then once you're over that, the high fiber will improve it. Can it improve your antibodies? No. What are some of the things that can improve your antibody antigen reactions? Having a happy disposition. Worry about nothing. Worry is blind. Give it to God. The best thing is just let go. Let God take care of it, and yes, we're going to suffer on this earth. All of us are going to come down with something. We're going to have perplexities. And as I had our pastor tell us the other day, he said, if you don't have any stress in your life, and 2 Timothy 3:1 says we will have stress in our life, but if you don't have any stress in your life, Satan is out seeking whom he may devour, and he's already had you for lunch. So if you have stress in your life, praise the Lord, because he hasn't had you yet for lunch. If you already have osteoporosis, can you reverse it by becoming alkaline instead of acid? Yes, you sure can. Yes, we have found this in studies, that we can actually change the acid-base balance. It will help your osteoporosis. That is one more treatment for osteoporosis. Now, one of the myths are that you can take Tums or calcium carbonate. The problem with that extra calcium for osteoporosis is you need an acid environment to absorb calcium. And what are you doing with Tums? It's an acid. Doesn't work. Best thing you can do is change your diet, exercise regularly, weight bearing will help osteoporosis, and we actually will be talking about this later this week. What do you do for arthritis in the lower back and knees? Again, this has been a problem because of the acidic diet. We don't see it in Africa, in third world countries. In fact, when I was a student missionary there, we didn't see broken bones. The only broken bone I saw while I was there was a lady that had 100 pounds on her head. She had a baby on her back, a baby at her side, and was pregnant. And the corn in the maize that she was carrying on her head shifted. She tried to balance it, and it broke her arm. Bones are very strong when we eat the correct way. Arthritis in the back and knees, one of the suggestions that we found that improves that appears to be AMS gelatin. Now, you've heard of glucosamine and chondroitin? Well, chondroitin, of course, is from shark, and it's not in Leviticus 11 to eat. And glucosamine tends to come from pig and horse hoofs, and that's probably not the best. But I have found just as much success with seaweed, gelatin. So, M's gelatin will help. Now, here's what it will help in. Those that have osteoarthritis of the joints where it's bone rubbing on bone, no protective cartilage. What the M's gelatin, and it's 2 tablespoons a day, and that's the, you can get some down there at the Book and Bible House, I'm pretty sure. It's vegetarian gelatin, and you take the powder or the little granules, and you put it in your water or juice. What it does is it puts a small layer of cartilage back over that joint so that you won't be rubbing bone on bone. If your arthritis is from anything else, it won't help. But I have had benefit with that for arthritis in the knees and back. Again, the omega-3 will help if this is inflammatory arthritis. It will help him. It will help naturally, like if it's rheumatoid arthritis. And that will help as well, to be natural. Ames in fruit juice, yes. Ems, E-M-E. Why would cholesterol go very high when I've been on a vegetarian diet all my life and don't eat much fat? No dairy, no refined foods, butter, margarines, or mayonnaise. You know what? If that's exactly how you're eating, I'm not worried about you. I don't care if your cholesterol is 300. Because the only way you're going to get in trouble is by oxidized cholesterol. And oxidized cholesterol only comes from one place. Animal products when you cook it. You're not going to eat the cow raw. And all your milk is pasteurized, so it's already going to be oxidized. If you do not have a diet like that, what you're making is what you're already predestined to make from birth. You make X amount of cholesterol. That's great. That cholesterol you need. Cholesterol is a bad rap. That it's not going to be good for you to have a high cholesterol. It's okay if you have a high cholesterol. It's okay. Because what we're going to find is if it's just urine, you're on a vegan diet, you're not going to oxidize and rupture a plaque. You're not going to get a heart attack or stroke. You're not going to probably come down with cancer from that. You're probably not going to be eating the things that would propense you to that. And if you're looking at your cholesterol numbers and you're eating that way, I wouldn't worry about it. And you'll find that when you break down the cholesterol numbers, the good cholesterol will be high and the bad cholesterol will be low, and I'm not worried about that. Now, we will be checking cholesterols here at the camp meeting, so I want you to get your cholesterol checked, and then come back to me, and we'll go over those cholesterols, I think it's Wednesday or Thursday. All right, let's see. What about flaxseed for lowering cholesterol? Yes, flaxseed, not ground, a ground flaxseed or whole flaxseed is also high in fiber, and it'd be great for lowering cholesterol. It'll also give you your omega-3. I think that's an excellent example. Now, we got to end up here soon here. What are the health benefits of avocados? Avocados are monounsaturates. They're not polyunsaturates, and they're not saturated. And the difference is we found that people that change from the saturated fat, like meat, to the polyunsaturated, we had this great big thing with margarine. We changed, and you know what? People in the United States, when they did the double-blind studies, didn't live any longer. Instead of dying of heart attacks and strokes for the people that were eating the saturated food, they were eating the polyunsaturated, and they died of cancer instead. So we substituted one bad thing for another bad thing. Didn't help them. So avocados are good. Certainly there's moderation in all things. And you want some more information on Crohn's disease. We can talk about that later. What is Crohn's disease? And Crohn's disease is an inflammatory response to the bowel. We don't have a cause for it at this point. And we will be talking more about that and how you can treat it naturally. And sometimes you can't. It's a mean booger, and I have almost died from it. How can we help a coworker with Crohn's disease? We'll talk about that. Just hang in there with me. We'll get to all of these questions. Now, there's a praise. Isn't this good? A praise. I praise God that we can be here this week. And all the requests we will pray over, and a few of them we will bring to you. I thank you very much for coming today. We will get more of these questions as we go through the week. And remember, worry is blind. We're not going to worry about it, are we? It's natural for us to worry. But you know what? When God's in charge and we don't look at the short term, we only look at the long term of events, that's where you have to start changing your mindset. I'm not going to look at tomorrow. You're only responsible for today. And after that, it's all God's. And you know what? We don't want to be responsible for anything else. Do you really want to see the future? No, you don't want to know what's going on. You'd rather do it day at a time, and God knew that when he told us that. Worry is blind. He has 1,000 ways to provide for us, of which we know nothing. Do you believe that? Do you know he's going to give us a new heart and a new spirit? Because he's going to change us. And by the way we eat and the way we act, we can be more temperate, we can be more examples for him, and we can be an example for him so that he is safe to save us. We are safe to save, and Satan cannot have his hand over us. Yes, we may suffer this death, first death here on this earth, but we know we have victory over second death, whether we live or whether we die. Let's stand for prayer. Great Father, we ask as we go over these medical facts and medical truths that we might have you in our hearts. We might have a change of heart, a change of mind, and a new spirit and a new heart given to us. Take out our hearts of flesh, our hard hearts, and let us be humble before you that you might speak to us and correct us and reprove us so that we might have the blotting out of sins in our lives. In your Son's name, Jesus, amen.
You've been listening to another special American Cassette Ministries presentation. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. International copyright 2002, American Cassette Ministries, all rights reserved. For additional cassettes by this speaker or for a free catalog of other American Cassette Ministry cassettes, please contact us as follows. To order toll-free in the United States and Canada, dial 800-233-4450. For international calls, dial 717-652-7000. For fax orders, dial 717-652-9050. Our internet email address is info@americancassette.org. Other cassettes may also be ordered from our secure website at www.americancassette.org. Our entire catalog is online, and we accept MasterCard, Visa, and Discover credit cards. Or you may simply write to American Cassette Ministries, Post Office Box 922, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, 17108, in the United States of America. Maintaining the integrity of the Three Angels' messages for 27 years, American Cassette Ministries requests your continued prayers and financial support as we strive to provide you with the finest, most powerful spiritual messages available. Our one purpose in ministry, to prepare you and your loved ones to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.